Thanks again, Kimo, for joining the Rethink Peer-to-Peer podcast. It's been about 3 months since we spoke last time on camera.
Yep.
What happened since then? We can see good traction on income, I would say, in terms of the numbers, the funded loan volume. And in the meantime, income has also been voted as a top five peer-to-peer platform within my community voting. So good momentum, I would say. Where do you see like the positive traction coming from lately?
Yeah. Thanks. Happy to be here. We ended last year with 7 million outstanding. So that was the total portfolio size from all investments. And I think we're now around 12 million. And I think we're on a good road to roughly 20 million by the end of this year, hopefully faster. But I think that's a realistic growth rate if we can just keep up the supply of loans. Where is the good traction coming from? I think it's just consistency. So we try to cooperate and communicate with investors as much as we can. And then keep on doing what we do. I think like the first 2 years for any platform is always a question mark in terms of, you know, people finding you, finding the trust, seeing what you do. And then after that, it's mainly just to do the things you've established with. And of course, for us, I mean, what we need to do is get more loan originators. That's something that's been asked from us. And then, of course, deal with the old ones as well.
I remember from our last conversation about 3 months ago that we had on camera, you said like with the current originators, you can possibly double your origination volume and grow the portfolio to about 16 to 18 million. Is that still like what you're seeing, or do you feel like there will be changes in advance and onboarding new lenders prior to this?
I think we will be able to get to that 20 mark roughly with the ones that we have today. So that if I say 20 by the end of the year, 16 to 18 probably makes sense with the existing ones. ITF definitely has still a lot to offer. Vivus probably is a little bit on the kind of, let's say, peaking in terms of what they are originating to keep the quality okay. Dana Rupia is still growing. In order for us to get to, let's say, to the competitor level where we want to start touching, you know, 50 million euro book or so, then obviously what we would need to for that is a sort of a strong anchor LO who can absorb much more than the smaller ones. Or several small ones, of course, to add, but yeah.
Obviously, one of the biggest, as you said, like in your answer prior, one of the question marks that we can maybe pick up is the one from Click Cash. I feel like that's possibly also the biggest concern for many investors still to this day. In regards to income, can you just briefly share like what's the current status quo here?
Sure. So actually, for everyone who is interested, we updated the original blog post now, which was called Click Cash Suspended from Listings. That was from last November. So this is when we started experiencing problems. So we've added a few graphs, you know, how much interest and principal received by a month, you know, received payments versus principal gone to recovery. So we added some graphs and some updates. So there's a good picture there. But in short, we are actively finding solutions with them. And they have been now for the past... Last week, we didn't receive anything, but let's say about the past 3 weeks, they've been delivering us cash in different amounts. So for example, I'll just do a rundown here. We received in last December, 7,500, then January, another 7,500 roughly. Then there was 2 months of hiatus. And then again, in May, we've already received 15,000, almost 14,000 from them. So actually, cash flow now from them is higher than it's been ever before, mainly due to the discussions and let's call it the attitude of the management and the shareholders as well. So where we are trying to hit now with them is actually to have a clear payment plan that we can then disclose also to the investors that they would stick to. And you know, our aim is still full recovery. So essentially... Yeah, that's in short what the situation is at the moment.
Mm. I remember in March you mentioned that there is a fundraising in place potentially on ClickCash side with which all the outstanding debt could be covered. Is there any update on this or any progress?
Yeah, they are still in discussions with the potential investors. I'd say there has been progress, but nothing that we can still today comment to the investors. I don't want to send out messages which then turn out to be wrong. So that's why also we've been a little bit hesitant to give out any clear payment plans. But I think it's a very good sign that in May we already received basically the largest payments from them since the problem started. So I think that's a good sign on the goodwill of the company, but also on the progress we've made.
Hmm. Well, I personally would also consider it a good sign that you are still seem to be quite confident that there will be a 100% recovery. Now, I want to mention again, like the timeline, is there anything that you can share, like what your personal view is, what the timeline you expect until that full recovery is in place?
I'm difficult to say. I mean, obviously, our interest is to recover it as fast as possible. Also to note that any delays that they've had have been accruing interest, right? So of the roughly 30,000 we have received, then 20,000 has been allocated to principal, and 10,000 has gone to the investors. So as of today, our logic holds that whatever money is pending to the investors, it should accrue daily interest. So obviously, if there are delays, then interest accrues, it will be calculated on top. Where I'm saying full recovery, I'm meaning that we would get all the cash plus interest to the investors. But as of what is the actual deadline by when we should do, I think I need a little bit of more time to get with them to the place where we have a signed agreement saying this is the payment plan, which we can then disclose to the investors.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Being a shareholder yourself at ClickCash, I was wondering, how do you personally view this topic of conflict of interest? So when there's overlaps between lenders and platforms, in the past we have seen on competitors' platforms similar issues, or let's say occasions where there might be an assumption, this was not really done in favor of the investors. Mm-hmm. Now you're kind of in between chairs here as well. So what's your view on this topic in general?
So I'm a financial investor in there. I invested some money back in the day, and this has been, as you know it, as everybody knows, this been disclosed as well. My, let's say, relatively strong view is that the overall, the general good of, or let's say the generally the lending business is always more profitable than a platform business. So there is an inclination, and I still hold true to this statement, there is an inclination if there is a fully LO-owned platform, then there is certain a conflict of interest in that case. So that's the way I look at it. I find it that if there are problems, then perhaps the owners would prefer to save the lending business versus the platform. But this is not, of course, always the case. And in case like ClickCash, I think the fact that I am a shareholder in there, and so is Tolaram, who has invested in both companies, in this case, it's probably positive, mainly due to the fact that we have a relatively friendly management to discuss with. We have friendly shareholders to discuss with. So the connection as such is good. And both parties understand that actually the investors on income should come first before any personal benefit. So I would say in our case, it's a positive thing. Overall, I would say it might be a risky thing. But again, you never know how platforms and loan originators act in a situation like this.
Hmm. Now, one of the aspects from our recent conversation has been the differences between the pledge structure and the assignment structure, and that this also kind of impacted the way, let's say, monitoring the securities, the collateral has not been really as good as, let's say, with other lenders. Can you, for beginners, maybe explain again the difference between the pledged and the assignment structure? also in terms of monitoring securities, and maybe go a bit deeper into the topic and explain the differences so there's maybe a better understanding for investors as well.
Sure. So in short, if we start with the normal assignment structure that most people have, so you have the junior share, and then you have the senior part, and the senior part, that's the investable part in each loan, right? So you might have a loan from ITF, for example, where you invest the 1,000 euro loan, you are able to invest only 800, and 20 is then used as the buffer for that. Now, essentially, when an assignment happens, then when they list 1,000 euros, the investors only invest this amount, right? So the, let's say in this case the 80%, and the 20, if there's problems, then acts as a buffer. And in this buffer, we've calculated potential risks, you know, what happens to currencies if there's an FX, and so forth and so forth. And the idea is that this first loss buffer will cover in the case of a default. And you can't even list more than that, right? So essentially, if we've set the buffer at that, you can only always list loans with 20% of down junior share and 80% of senior. And that comes from the system. Now, in terms of a pledge structure, if you have one, then essentially what we do in due diligence, we try to establish what, the same thing, what's the cash flow from the loan book? And then we derive from there what is the junior share again. So now let's say the 20-80, but if you have now a pledge where actually there is no junior share as such. So if they list 1,000 euros, investors can invest 1,000 euros. But on the flip side, it is backed by, for example, 120% of net book assets. So you get my point, it's similar, whereas the other one is other way around. You have 20% junior share and 80% investable. Mm. Now in a pledge, you have 100 investable, but 120% of assets backing it. So you get the difference. And now the question comes also on what is net book value of assets, for example. So you could have, if you have a deteriorating loan book, and actually the same could happen in a junior share structure as well, but let's say more so to the pledge one, if you have a net book where in your own accounting, once it's 14 days past due, 30 days past due, and so forth, it still carries some net book value. But obviously, it's not the same as having all loans performing in there. So if something deteriorates very fast, then you might look at the net book value, which is pledged, to be very good. But if it consists of actually loans that have deteriorated while it still holds on to those, then the recovery from there can be less. And therefore, I would say the monitoring, what needs to happen in a pledged book, is actually to see more often even that the assets are worth what they're supposed to be, not just purely on the net book value of it, which is something we've done. The only one at the moment sharing is Phoebus. Actually, they have a pledge. And in that case, we actually have them that it can be only loans that are on time. So that's been agreed. We have an overall pledge on their assets saying, or on their loan book saying, these loans are included. Anything happens, we can collect on those. On Vivo's part, actually, we're now working on to bring them to the normal assignment structure, because it's cleaner for the investors. It's more clear to investors. But also the other thing is that then investors will have access to these shorter loans, what they've been asking us. So now instead of the similar structure as ClickCash had, now we want to bring them into this sort of a direct assignments into loans in Mexico. So that's a short development what we're also working on. But to be very clear, at this point we don't see any problems with Vivus's book. So essentially the comparison to ClickCash is not comparing them in that sense. It's just saying it shares a similar structure.
How difficult would you say is it in general to create or establish some sort of API monitoring for pledged assets?
It's probably not very difficult to do it, but I think it's today easier still to request an updated file, and it requires probably you know, half a day's of work from an analyst to take a look at it. So again, to be just sure that this happen and it's monitored on time and it's monitored more frequently than perhaps before.
Can you explain?
APIs, yeah, please.
Can you explain why there's sometimes a pledged structure in place compared to the assignment structure when it seems to be so much easier to, you know, track everything? So is there, I don't know, reason from the outset that normal investors wouldn't see why you have this in place, the pledged structure then?
The pledged structure is essentially in place if there is no clear way of securing the receivable in those countries in any other way. So, for example, in case of ClickCash, doing assignments in Brazil seem to be very difficult and they might not hold up in court. Therefore, we went with the pledge structure. So it really depends. We're looking now at Philippines, for example. And again, the question there is, will assignment structures work? Do we need to figure out something else? The main idea holds that there needs to be an actual security on the loan book. How is that achieved? Then that's the question mark. So it's really, I mean, our preference would be globally to do assignments. That's our bread and butter in that sense. It would be easier, more clearer to the investors. No different structures, nothing. But if the security element can't be done in a sufficient way, then obviously if we want to onboard somebody, then we need to think of it, what actually makes it secure.
Do you think this will also for future collaborations with external lenders, let's say, impact your decisions that, you know, you have a policy in place to really have this assignment structure in place, or otherwise there need to be other measures for the pledged security? So does this kind of impact income now also moving forward with new collaborations, basically?
Well, I mean, I'd be kind of a, how would I say, pragmatic and opportunistic in that sense, that if the LO is a very established LO from a country where we can only do pledges, you know, such as Vibusis, for example, it's part of a larger group and, you know, we don't perceive any risks. We actually see it as a very good investment case. Then obviously in that kind of a case, I would go with pledges. I'd still say that is okay if that's the only way to secure. In principle, I would streamline to assignments in most of the cases. So that would be my choice one. And again, mainly due to the investors' clarity, because we also want to be transparent, but we do realize that many investors are not from the industry. Most are not from the industry. And every time we introduce something new, which seems clear to us, it actually causes a lot of questions from investors. You know, like, let's say most lately we did the voluntary buyback to some loans because investors wanted faster liquidity. So voluntary buyback, for example, means that an LO, when they list a loan today that would have a maturity of 24 months, they can virtually set it at 12 months. And now, you know, while it addresses the problem of more faster liquidity to investors, and the investors generally like loans less than 12 months, it also raised a lot of questions. So how does it work? How do I filter for them? And so forth and so forth. So overall, we're aiming for more clarity. And that's why I would also like to have a standard solution for everything. Investors would probably appreciate it more.
For sure. Well, thanks for sharing your insights here on ClickCash and also the security structures. Now, I want to shift towards another topic, which is regulation. Last time in September, I think it was, when I visited also Income in Tallinn, obviously very clear in my head, you're welcoming regulation. And I also remember that in October, you were posting an article where you mentioned that the Estonian, there is a possibility that Estonia is kind of obtain some sort of law for peer-to-peer platforms, something which is obviously not covered for the ECSP license, which doesn't apply to you. You said there is a chance, or it seems likely, that by the end of the first quarter 2023, there will be some sort of law enforced, or let's say there will be an adoption of a law and then you can apply, obviously. What happened on this topic in the meantime?
Unfortunately, not much has moved with the legislator. So essentially, I spoke to our lawyers as well. They said there is some discussions ongoing, but essentially we're in the same place where we were last time we spoke. So we haven't seen an updated draft. My assumption and the lawyer's assumption is as well that it's still in the drawing board by the local regulator. So unfortunately, we can't give any update on that.
Okay. And you also can't share why you believe this is kind of postponed now for the unforeseeable future?
No, I guess, to go back a little bit, we covered it, but essentially first it came when the European crowdfunding regulation came, the Estonian regulator, the legislator wanted to pen it together with crypto regulation. So that didn't work out. And, you know, crypto assets and P2P, they're a little bit, or crowdfunding are a little bit different animals. So they decided first that they would do it together, then they decided to split it. So they managed to do the crypto part. And then they focused on the crowdfunding part. And the European crowdfunding regulation is quite clean, that it's quite clearly follows the logic of equity crowdfunding and also real estate crowdfunding. So it looks like the regulators took the fast route and penned the law on those. So those two fields are regulated in Estonia today. Whereas the loan marketplaces were left as a sort of a last animal to be regulated. And I think that's the main issue there, that they haven't, maybe it's not even a huge priority for them. I haven't spoken with them direct, but one would assume. And that causes, of course, a lot of questions. You know, when we talk with anyone or any partners, institutional investors, everybody's first question is, are you regulated? I would love to say, yes, we are, because it kind of, you know, cleans that topic. But that's why I'm explaining the same thing to everyone as I'm explaining today. So we're looking forward still. And for those who might not be very familiar with the law, then I think the main logic of it is that it focuses on conflict of interest, what we discussed before, generally investor protection, some grace periods on investments, disclosures, and then also the buyback period, the buyback guarantee was also one of the topics that was raised in the previous draft. And the question there was, how will buyback guarantee be applied? Should the platform give it, or should the LO give it?
And if there should be some sort of insurance fund, I think is what
correct.
You mentioned.
Yeah, yes, correct. So would there be an insurance fund? Who would collect it? What should be the size? How that will affect the business models, I have no idea today. I'd like to see first what they're saying. So we're waiting to see what there is.
I'm assuming in terms of transparency and compliance, another aspect could be, you know, publishing audited financial reports, which is something you can obviously cross off the list yourself if you wanted to. Is this going to happen for the 2022 report? What can you say about the financials? What's coming out basically from the previous year?
Yeah, we are in that sense, we are in schedule, we are in budget. We are a startup which is venture funded. So we are obviously not making profit today. 2021, 2022, we are we've been clearing some IT related accounting and IT related things to the auditors. So essentially, I hope to get the 2021 signed off very soon. We're at the last stages. Has taken a hell of a lot of time. Maybe it's also a little bit of a new industry for the auditors. And 2022, we also wish to close ASAP. On the financials, like I said, we're in budget, we're venture funded, we are loss making, but that's all as it at the moment should be. And our investors are supporting us until break even. That's the strong message I'm getting from them. So in that sense, we're on plan.
Who's going to audit the report?
PwC, PwC is auditing the 2021 report. 2022, we are still discussing a little bit because of the delays, who should be a faster option.
Okay. Maybe one side question. Can you share like also how much such an audited from PwC costs you in the end?
I guess it's pretty standard. I think it's roughly for their time, I would say in Estonia, anything between 10 and 15,000. So these are not like massive costs as such. It's more of a question of what can we achieve in what time. And, you know, they have also their own, let's call it seasons, which are the end of the years when they take on bigger companies. And then comes the question that, you know, as all the large companies are audited by Big Four, does Big Four give us the benefit that's needed? Could it be a second tier company in order for us to be able to finish faster? So these are the discussions that I'm having with the other board member and the shareholders as well, what to do and how to move.
Looking ahead now until the end of the year, one of the objectives of Income prior to this year starting has been implementing a secondary market, also something many investors would like to see. What can you share about the progress here?
Well, we expect it. I think I mentioned it last time to you as well. So we expect, our thinking is that we will not build a separate section where you would be able to sell them at a discount or at profit, depending which way you look at it. So our thinking is rather that what we expect so far is to simplify it a little bit. We would just be dropping those loans back to the normal listings. So if you then you want to, you know, exit from a loan, you say, okay, I'm selling it. You'll sell it at face value and it appears as a listing. And then perhaps we'll add into auto invest filters if you want to take first time loans or second time tier loans, let's call it second tier, if it's coming from an investor, first tier if it comes from a low. And then essentially, I think it just removes a lot of complexity and you know, maybe the new investors will not be poached on the secondary market on the discounts. It can be a bit confusing. So yeah, so we will try to simplify. It's been spec'd. I guess for development, hopefully we'll get it this year still. It's more of a question to us, when is there enough liquidity on the platform to give the investors an actual secondary market? You know, if we looked at it last year when we reached 7 million outstanding and most of the time we were actually invested fully, then the question comes that if you add a secondary market and market it, that now you can exit your loans, but actually you don't have that opportunity, then it can, you know, it doesn't really bring the benefit we would like for investors to have. So it's a little bit of a question on liquidity rather than when do we want to push it into IT.
Okay, but from your forecast or the timeline seems to be like you're optimistic you can...
This year, yeah, it's not a huge development as such. I mean, like I said, it's spec'd, so it's a question when do we want to push it in. Probably it will happen after summer.
Okay. Can you say like what's the average loan term right now on the platform, let's say across all lenders, obviously?
I think it's roughly, I mean, what we noticed, I don't have the average loan term today, but what we notice is that anything below 12 months is actually selling very well and then decreasingly well after 24 months. I'd assume the average today is probably below 12 months still. Not too many very long loans. And then that's one of the reasons why we put this early buyback into production as well, to allow the LOs to have a virtual buyback date when the investor gets the liquidity, to address the thing that investors generally seem to, at least on our platform, to have that liquidity option.
Okay. Do you personally see the necessity of publishing or implementing a secondary market on the marketplace, given its relatively short-term assets that you're offering?
Well, I think it's good still. You know, where does the secondary market need come from? Generally comes, at least in my own thinking, is that you might have an idea of holding everything for 12 months or, you know, 36 months or whatever. And then something happens and you wish to take your money out. And I don't mean now an event on the loan originators, like a, you know, kind of a distress situation. I'm just thinking more of your own life that, hey, you know, I need to change an apartment. I want to buy real estate. I want to do whatever. So I think it's nice to have that kind of an exit possibility, regardless of you know, the relatively short term. And that's why I think it's very good for us to implement it.
Okay. Thanks so much for sharing all those insights today, Kimmo. That would be it so far in terms of the questions. Maybe lastly, you can say a couple words directly to investors, something you feel like you want to address, something investors can look forward to in the upcoming months, or just any recent topics that you want to use now this opportunity to just clarify a few things?
Yeah, I'd say basically there's a whole lot of work that goes behind the scenes as such, you know. Many times it feels to investors there's no progress, and you know, the impatience of getting new loan companies, for example. You know, a lot of work goes behind the scenes. We obviously are very thankful for the investors for their patience, and so far the traction has been very good. And it's a joint operation. The more investors we have, the more liquidity we have, then the better loan companies we can also attract. And then vice versa, in that sense, the better loan companies come to us when they see that there's enough liquidity. So yeah, I mean, be in contact with us on Telegram or by email if anything bothers you. If there's anything, we really appreciate the feedback. We're trying to build a long-term good product for you. And yeah, stay tuned. Follow our blog, follow the Telegram. And that's all I have.
All right. Sounds excellent. Thank you very much for your time, Kimmo, and continued success also for the future.
Very good. Thank you, Denny.